Coed versus Holder, and we hear first from Mr. Rushton.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
May it please this honorable court, Lawrence Rushton appearing on behalf of the petitioner, Muhammad Abu Bakr Khalid. This case involves a process by which an alien becomes a lawful permanent resident of the United States through the immigrant visa process. I've attempted to provide a general overview of the statutory scheme by which that occurs, and I hope I've been clear in that. If I haven't, please feel free to ask me any questions as far as how the process regularly works. This particular case involves how certain amendments made by the Child Status Protection Act passed in 2002 apply to the treatment of children who are in this immigrant visa process. Specifically within the system of preference categories, which refers to all aliens who are not immediate relatives, that being parents, spouses, or children under the age of 21 of United States citizens. Everybody else falls into what we refer to in immigration law as preference categories. And this deals with these preference categories. Now, in the case of the petitioner, Mr. Khalid, his maternal aunt, his mother's sister, is a U.S. citizen. She filed a petition, an immigrant visa petition, for his mother in 1996, January of 1996. At that time, under the law, and still today, Mr. Khalid, the child of, essentially the nephew of his aunt, was considered a family member of his mother, who was a direct beneficiary of that petition. And so he was 11 years old at the time, so he was considered to be a beneficiary. Now, due to the backlog created by a scarcity of allocated immigrant visas, the time period that passed before that family was eligible to apply for their resident status was approximately 11 years. They became eligible to apply for the residency status in February of 2007. Now, in February 2007, Mr. Khalid had already turned 21. He turned 21 in 2005. So that is where the issue of the Child Status Protection Act became relevant. Now, Congress had amended the immigration laws and passed the Child Status Protection Act. In particular, the issue relevant to today's proceeding, they amended the act and included a provision under Section 203H. 203 subsection H of the Immigration Nationality Act, which is 8 U.S.C. section 1153 sub H. Now in that, the first paragraph, H1, describes a formula which the government will use to determine the age of an applicant for immigration purposes. And under H1, the law says, for purposes of subsection A2A and D, referring back to 203A2A and 203D. Now, 203D is where Mr. Khalid's petition fell as the derivative beneficiary. His mother was a principal beneficiary, and Mr. Khalid was a derivative beneficiary.
It's your position that H2 applies to H1 and H3, correct?
That's correct.
Because it's incorporated.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. So under H1, you apply the formula, which basically addresses administrative delays in processing. So you apply that formula, and Mr. Khalid still turns out to be 21. So he's not considered to be under 21 and therefore a child for immigration purposes. So he doesn't qualify under paragraph 1. Now we go to paragraph 3, where it says retention of priority date. If the age of an alien is determined under paragraph 1, to be 21 years of older for the purposes of subsection A2A and D, the alien's petition shall automatically be converted to the appropriate category, and the alien shall retain the original priority date issued upon receipt of the original petition. And that's where today's argument begins. It begins with this entire subsection, according to the Board of Immigration Appeals.
Well, I mean, what would the automatic conversion be for a nephew?
Well, you see, it's the petitioner's interpretation that this is two different issues. The first clause, if the age of an alien is determined under paragraph 1 to be 21 years of age or older for for the purposes of subsection A2A and D, now that is the petitioner's interpretation, defines the universe of eligible aliens. Now what follows are procedural issues as to how it's implemented. Well, the alien shall retain the original priority date. When we have the and, automatically be converted to the appropriate category. The appropriate category would have to be the category vis-a-vis the principal beneficiary of that original petition, which is Mr. Collett's mother. And Mr. Collett's mother, as soon as she became a resident, filed a petition for Mr. Collett.
For her son.
Right, for her son, correct. And it's our assertion that the language here in retention of priority date would allow him to keep that priority date established in the 1996 petition for the subsequent petition filed for his mother. And in that case, the appropriate category would be the relationship between Mr. Collett and his mother, because there is no direct relationship between Mr. Collett and the U.S. citizen aunt petitioner. Now, my definition of that, and the government has said that I said that was ambiguous. What I did say in my brief was that appropriate category was undefined in the statute. And the definition that I've used in my brief was actually a definition that was provided by Board Member Pauley, one of the longest-serving members of the BIA, in an unpublished decision, panel decision, issued by the BIA prior to their decision in the matter of Wang, which agreed with the petitioner's position and interpretation of this law.
Right, but you did not ever say it was ambiguous.
I did
you
not say.
You said that it was clear statutory language in
Absolutely.
Your brief. Is that correct?
That's correct.
It's a mischaracterization of your position?
That's correct. What I did say was ambiguous is the automatic conversion, those three words, automatically be converted. There is some ambiguity there, but as I stated in my brief, I think that's an issue of procedure. Congress has defined the categories of eligible aliens, and they've left the procedure to the respondent to interpret. For example, the respondent could say, all right, they're automatically converted without filing a new petition, or he could say they're automatically converted by the filing of a new petition, by the new petitioner, Mr. Collett's mother, for example. And in fact, that's what historically the respondent has done in regulation. As I cited him here, 8 CFR 204.2A4 essentially retains the priority date for the child of a lawful permanent resident, but that lawful permanent resident still must file another petition for the child.
Regardless of whatever the automatic conversion is of the filing of the new petition, you're relying on the second half of H3 that says that the alien, no matter what type of conversion, would retain the original priority date issued to the mother.
That's correct. Right. That's correct, John. That's correct.
But has any court now adopted your view?
At this particular point in time, there have been a few district court decisions. Essentially, there was one district court decision in California that did not. They found it to be ambiguous because they said that A2A and D could cover the same category. I don't think that's correct because I think subsection D clearly states that it applies to aliens not otherwise entitled to an immigrant visa.
Right, but has any court adopted your reading of the statute?
No.
But is it correct that two other circuits are poised to look at the issue?
The Ninth Circuit is, and in fact, unfortunately, I didn't find that out until just recently. This court also is entertaining another case on the same issue. That case is number 10-60093, Wu, W-U-V Holder.
Where is it? Has it been briefed or where is it?
It's been briefed, but that's all I know at this point in time.
Has the Second Circuit, though, also looked at it? No?
I believe it may be pending there, but I really couldn't tell you for certain, Your Honor.
Okay.
So, returning to the analysis of the...
How about addressing the government's argument that this is unfair because it would place your petitioner unfairly ahead of other petitioners?
Yes, Your Honor, I've noticed that. And fairness is a very difficult tool to use, or a very awkward tool to use, when we're doing statutory interpretation. Because if we look at subsection H in its entirety, You know, even if we apply the formula, and nobody disputes the formula, the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service says that, you know, the formula in H-1 applies to these petitions. Whenever we apply that formula, we're saying that this alien, even though he's over 21, will be considered to be under 21 for immigration purposes. Well, that's displacing someone, because there is someone out there who's 21 who filed later on. And then the other issue about fairness and the idea that somehow this is allowing these people to cut in line or to move, jump to the front of the line, which I believe is the language the Board of Immigration Appeals used. Now, what we're saying, what we're looking at in this situation is Mr. Khalid was 11 years old when this petition was filed. He waited 11 years before he would have become eligible. What we're saying is that give him credit for the time that he's already spent and move into another category. Now, in some instances, that would make him immediately eligible because the backlog is not that long in a different category. But in some cases, it would still require a wait of several years. So we're not jumping anybody to the front of the line. We're just allowing that person who's already spent over a decade waiting in line to not have to go to the end of another line and wait another decade before they can become a lawful permanent resident of the United States. So the fairness argument here, it cuts both ways. There are some people who are displaced, but it's also not exactly fair to tell somebody who's followed all the rules and waited a decade that, hey, you know, now your parents are here, you know, go back to the end of another line and wait another 10 years or more.
Okay, and subsection 2 describes the petitions that subsection 3 applies to, and I assume there are other categories of petitions that would not get this break on the date.
Well, there are some. The petitions described paragraph H2 under subsection A is talking about the children of lawful permanent residents. Under subsection B, they're talking about subsection D, 203D of the Act, right. And they're saying that applies to all immigrant visa petitions.
All what?
Immigrant visa petitions, different categories. So you have people who are applying through a job. You have the children of children of United States citizens. So essentially the grandchild of the U.S. citizen petitioner. So it encompasses a very broad category within the immigrant visas. Now, it does not apply to non-immigrant visas. So if you did have somebody who's, you know, applying on an H-1B or some sort of other non-immigrant work-related visa or student visa, of course, it's not going to apply to that. It applies to people who are applying through an immigrant visa process. And there are a fairly large number of categories. Depending upon how you count it, it can, you know, we're talking about the adult children of U.S. citizens, we're talking about the employment visa petitions, we're talking about diversity visa petitions. So it can be a very fairly large category, but it's not, it doesn't cover everyone.
Well, so, I guess I look at this kind of like the tax code. There are all kind of categories that are created.
Yes, sir.
And Congress did not set out to make it completely fair to everybody or everybody be treated exactly the same.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. And so basically our argument here is that, you know, if Congress had intended to limit this to the children of lawful permanent residents, which is the board's interpretation, they could have very easily said so. If they had written paragraph 3 and in this part where it says for the purposes of subsection A to A and D, if they had left out the D, it would have covered them. So essentially what we're saying here is give effect to every word used in the statute to the extent possible. That's what we're asking for here. And also, the puzzling thing the board said, unlike sections 203H1 and 203H2, which when read in tandem clearly define the universe of petitions that qualify, if you have to use H1 and H2 in tandem to understand them, why would you consider H3 in isolation? The language is identical. You can only use H3 if you have gone through the process at H1. So why would H3 be considered completely in isolation when you've also considered the same terms in the subsection from H1 and H2. It follows that Congress had the same intent when they used the same words in the same subsection of law. In fact, that's case law in this circuit.
Okay, you have some time left for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Jaeger.
Good afternoon. It may please the court. I am Glenn Jaeger. I represent the United States Attorney General in this matter. This matter is fairly simple. In the INA, a petitioner has, he has two obligations to satisfy. He has to have available visa, and the visa number has to be immediately available before he's eligible for adjustment. In this case, he has an available visa from his mother, a second preference petition, but that visa number isn't available until approximately 2015, and that's why the board denied his adjustment application, because there's no available visa. Now, he's trying to shoehorn into this, because he is now aged out, he's an adult, he has a second preference visa, and he's trying to shoehorn in his prior, which is now considered more or less terminated, fourth preference visa filed on behalf of his mother with a preference date that is current. Now, under the CSPA, the Child Status Protection Act, according to the board, the reasonable interpretation is he cannot do that. He cannot apply the prior priority date to his second preference visa.
Let me just ask you this. Do you read H2 as not including the class of petitioners that Mr. Khalid doesn't fall within a class of petitioners described in H2?
H2, Your Honor, describes the petitioners in H1, the ones that are eligible for the delayed processing formula. In other words, if you are indeed 21, but really under 21 because the CIS delayed processing the visa application. In other words, it says the petition described in this paragraph, it doesn't say subsection, which would mean the whole 1, 2, and 3. It says this paragraph. And in 1, the last part of section 1, it says the number of days in the period during which the applicable petition described in paragraph 2 is pending. See, paragraph 1 describes paragraph 2, and paragraph 2 describes what's in paragraph 1 for the delayed processing formula.
Does paragraph 2 include the petitioner, though? Would he be included within 2?
Not now. He is now, it's important to clarify, he has applied for adjustment as an adult. He is no longer a child under D. His old petition was as a child. He applied for adjustment in 2007 with CIS. It was denied.
His original one counts, though, in H2. If we're still looking at that preference, H2 would apply.
H2 would apply.
To his category. Is that correct?
If he was applying as a child.
Which is what his theory of the case, that H2 applies to him because H3 also incorporates H1, which incorporates H2.
My position, it clearly describes, the petition described in this paragraph, that's section 2. It doesn't say this paragraph and paragraph 3.
But so paragraph 3 references H1, doesn't it?
No, I don't believe.
H3 explicitly references H1.
Okay.
Doesn't it, sir?
Determined under paragraph 1, the age of the alien.
Yeah, the age determination is made under H1. Is that correct,
right,
sir? And H1 says that you need to look at H2. So H3 references H1, which references H2. So they're all interrelated, not just 1 and 2.
But as to the age of the age is referenced throughout the whole thing, but as to the petitions that are described in paragraph 3, that does not incorporate that. The petitions is described in this paragraph under section 2 is a derivative and primary beneficiary. In other words,
if Congress meant for petition to have a different meaning in the three paragraphs, wouldn't it have spelled that out rather than defining it in the second paragraph and then cross-referencing it?
I don't believe so. I believe they were pretty clear into the purpose of this act was to alleviate the delayed processing formula. In other words, if a person, if the delay was due to the CIS, then you can actually be over 21 and still be considered under 21. I mean, that was the whole purpose of this act.
And where are you getting that from in the statute?
It actually, well, it's part of the legislative history in the board of, in the board's decision. It goes into legislative history as far
Isn't that kind of like looking for your friends, as it's been said, because aren't there other portions of the legislative history which say that it was to benefit these other folks?
I don't believe petitioner has incited any legislative history in that regard as far as it being to benefit all derivative petitioners, I mean, beneficiaries of petitions. I mean, if you look at Section 1, I mean, the whole purpose is to alleviate administrative delays. If you're over, you know, if your delay was from CIS, you can be over 21 and still be under 21 for purposes of derivative status. In other words, you don't age out of being a child.
But if there's a conflict between the legislative history and the plain text, we've got to follow the plain text, don't we, counsel?
Well, I would argue there is no plain text. It's ambiguous as far as what petitions are described in paragraph 3. It doesn't describe what petitions are described, as it does in paragraph 1 and 2.
So the statute uses the word petition in two different ways within the same subsection?
Well, not two different ways. One is just it doesn't describe the universe of petitions eligible for favorable treatment under that automatically converted and are able to retain the prior priority date. The universe of petitions eligible for that is not described. It just says petitions. Whereas in paragraph 2, as far as what's eligible for delayed processing formula, it describes the petitions under 2A and 2B. Whereas in Section 3, it doesn't describe it. It just says petitions described. And again, I'd like to point out, it says in Section 2, the petitions described in this paragraph, it doesn't say subsection, which would mean 1, 2, and 3. It says in this paragraph.
But I mean, you've got H is the caption is rules for determining whether certain aliens are children, and then all 1, 2, and 3 fall under that. I mean, they all are describing what the caption of the statute says. These are all the rules, and I don't know why you wouldn't read it all together and say they all interrelate to each other.
I don't think you can read it that way because, again, the petition described in this paragraph, it doesn't say subsection. It doesn't say, you know, subsection would be 1, 2, and 3. It says this paragraph. I mean, that goes to the delayed processing formula. Paragraph 1 is delayed processing formula. In other words, you know, if you're not 21, if you are 21, but you're due to the delay in the CIS processing the petition, you actually can be still a child due to delay of processing the petition. That's what paragraph 1 is, basically. And paragraph 2 describes what petitions are eligible for which aliens are eligible for the delayed processing formula. In other words, what the age of the alien is. In other words, and paragraph 3 describes what petitions are eligible for favorable treatment of automatic conversion and retention of priority dates, which is not the delayed processing formula. It's a different, whole different area.
But they both depend on H1's age out, and you have to do H1, which references H2, under either circumstance.
Could you restate that, please?
H3 cannot be used in a vacuum. You cannot apply H3 without having applied H1. Is that correct?
H1.
You have to go through the age determination in H1 to get to H3. And H3 explicitly references H1 in order to do that, doesn't it?
Yes, if the alien is determined under paragraph 1 to be 21 years of age or older. Right.
And then H1 goes through H2.
Right, to describe which petitions are, which aliens are over 21 or under 21 as far as the delayed processing formula.
What authority would you give us that it's reasonable to interpret the word petition in some unknown different way when you're talking in one section of a statute than in a way that's defined in another section of the same statute?
I would say if Congress meant for it to apply to all these paragraphs, it would have said in section paragraph 2, the petitions described in this subsection.
And that, so it said paragraph instead of subsection. That's what your argument hinges on today. Is that correct?
Right. And it doesn't say this paragraph and the following paragraph.
Okay. I wanted to go back to the legislative history. Are you aware with regards to the Senator Feinstein's comments in the legislative history, assuming arguendo that we're supposed to rely on this tool, where she said that the purpose, that she says, as a consequence, a family whose child's application for admission to the United States has been pending for many years may be forced to leave that child behind either because the INS was unable to adjudicate the application before the child's 21st birthday or because growing immigration backlogs in the immigration visa category caused the visa to be unavailable before the child reached his 21st birthday. Isn't that applicable to this petitioner? That was her reasoning of why this statute was necessary. You were telling me that we should look at the reason and the purpose. Doesn't he fit in that second category of people that we just described?
Well, in this case, he wouldn't because he's no longer a child. I mean, he's applying as an adult. So, and he's trying to bring the old priority date in.
But he is a person whose visa was unavailable before he reached the 21st birthday because of the growing backlog. Right?
In his first adjustment application.
Right. Which is what this statute, if we look at the legislative history, was to remedy that as well.
But now we're under the second adjustment application based on his adult status. He filed for adjustment in 2007 based on exactly what you're saying and was denied. We're now in the second adjustment application based on him being an adult, a B2, a second preference petition he's based his adjustment on as an adult child of an LPR.
Well, H3, the second half of H3, says you look at the original petition to determine if the alien's retaining that original priority date. So no matter what, even though he's on the second petition filed by the mother, he should be entitled under the statute to use the date that she became available, rather than getting to the back of a line.
Well,
otherwise, what's the purpose of having this language in here?
The purpose, the added benefit of this thing is without this adding and D in section 3, you now let's try and get this straight. A second preference, which just applies to A2A, a second preference no longer has to file a separate petition if the child ages out. Without this section, without section 3, you would have to apply for a separate petition if the child ages out. Now under D, under section 3, if a second preference alien ages out, you no longer have to file a separate petition to retain. In other words, as the board said, this applies, section 3 applies to second preference aliens who age out. They can retain their priority date, and they no longer have to file a separate petition, which 204, I believe petitioner cited to 204 of the regs, that you as long as it was filed by the same petitioner, you still had to file a separate petition, preference petition. Now you no longer have to under D. That's the added benefit of what this section gives an alien. In other words, it's not obsolete, it's not superfluous, it's not superfluous. Section D, yeah.
Well, so the mother still had to file a separate petition for the son once he reached 21. But it looks like under this language, he should be entitled to the date of the original petition that the aunt filed on behalf of the sister and the nephew. And when the mother became available, he should be in line as of that date rather than having to start over.
A problem with that is that automatic, you know, there's talk about giving effect to every word in the statute. There's really no way it can be automatic. The word automatically, is it being excised? I mean, how do you automatically convert a fourth preference petition into a second? There's no category. There's no preference category to convert an aged out fourth preference derivative petition. So how can you automatically convert it to? There's nothing to convert it to.
Well, didn't the BIA address that issue itself in the earlier Garcia, where there would be another category based on the derivative beneficiary's relationship to the primary beneficiary? If the reasoning in that case addressed that very issue, didn't it?
I believe the Garcia case is unpublished.
The agency addressed that very problem, didn't it?
In the unpublished decision, Garcia? Mm-hmm. I believe part of that analysis was in that decision, but the board doesn't have to rely on its unpublished decisions. It's not a precedential decision that covers every other case, whereas in Wang, it is precedential and it covers all, cases of the same issue.
Yeah, sometimes we think the analysis is better in unpublished opinions than it is in published opinions.
There are a lot more unpublished decisions, of course. Yeah, but anyway, that's a key point in this whole thing, is that there's no automatic conversion here. There's nothing to convert his fourth petition to. So
it's meaningless. If the nephew can't convert and save his time frame by the mother filing a petition on behalf of him, the son, then it's meaningless.
The automatic part of it?
Yeah.
That's what the effect of giving him his prior priority date would be, is to excise the word automatically from this statute, because it cannot automatically convert. There's nothing to convert. When he aged out his fourth preference petition, there's nothing to convert that to. There's no category for a niece of a aged out petitioner.
Nobody could be converted to a legal permanent resident petition on behalf of the legal permanent resident to admit her son, which is what happened here.
Yeah.
Once the mother got her approval,
he was over 21, and therefore he was no longer a child and derivative. So he was no longer.
Well, he's a son.
He's a son. He's a son, but he was.
Right.
But he was aged. He could not. He was no longer a child. He was no longer a child when she became an LPR. Right. That's why he was no longer a derivative.
So was the whole point of H3 to relieve somebody from filing another petition?
That is the effect. As far as the argument that and D is meaningless unless you apply it to all categories, employment, derivative, all these categories, D does apply some effect to the statute. And as far as
is there any other point to it? From under your interpretation.
Under my interpretation, I don't believe, I believe that is the extent of what D does, because D only applies, Section 3 applies to second preference, A2A. It says A2A.
Yeah.
And A2A, when they age out, they're eligible to retain their priority date if they file a new petition. In this sense, it automatically converts, it gives effect to all the language, it automatically converts under A2A, and you retain your priority date, and you don't have to file a new petition. So that's the effect of Section 3, Paragraph 3. So the is not irrelevant. It's not just put there for nothing. It does give effect.
I mean, is that reasonable that Congress would go to the trouble of putting that subsection in to relieve somebody of filing another petition? I mean, that seems like, I don't see Congress exhibiting that kind of concern about a petition being filed.
Well, I think when you consider the fact that I believe it costs like $350 to file a petition, a separate petition, I think when you add up the cost of all this, I believe there is a justification as far as the cost, as far as filing all these new petitions. It does relieve a person from filing a new petition, and the cost of doing that and the trouble. And the CIS doesn't have a backlog also of adjudicating these petitions that it otherwise wouldn't have to do. That's why ND is not, the way I'll put it, obsolete. It is given effect. It's just not put there and disregarded.
Not totally useless, in other words.
Exactly. You put it better than I did after all this time. And the retention thing, he can't under the reg, retention has to be a petition filed by the same petitioner. in this case, his mother is not his aunt. You know, in other words, under 204A, the petition has to be filed by the same petitioner. So his new petition, his new visa petition, the second preference, is filed by his mother. His 1996 was filed by his aunt. So it's not the same person. So again, the whole statutory scheme does not fit in well with his interpretation of trying to shoehorn his prior priority number into this adult visa petition second preference and using that prior priority number. So in that sense, I would ask that the board deny the petition for review. I mean the court, sorry.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jay. Yeah. Okay, back to you, Mr. Rush. Well, what do you say to counsel's argument that the application that we're dealing with here was filed by Mr. Khalid as an adult and not a child?
That's not in dispute. He is under the category of adult children of lawful permanent residents. It's under the A2B category. However, what the law says is he can retain the priority date for that original petition. So he doesn't have to go to the back of the line. He doesn't have to start all over. So he is in that category. I mean, he's not jumping in front of anyone. He's in that category as an adult. He just gets credit for the time that he's been waiting, which, you know, as the court has pointed out, that's exactly what Senator Feinstein said when the bill was introduced in the Senate. And that's relevant because the references in Matter of Wang to the legislative record are from the House version of the bill, which did not include this provision in the Child Status Protection Act. That did not become part of the act until it was introduced in the Senate. So there's nothing in the congressional record cited in Wang that's relevant to the bill as it finally passed. And the couple of citations that were cited in the legislative record are ambiguous at best. For instance, the comment by Congresswoman Jackson Lee, it's quoted in the respondent's brief, this bill will solve the age-old problem without displacing others who have been patiently waiting in other visa categories. And then the quotation stops. But the sentence continued. The Senate said, by allowing the child to use the date at the time of the parent's application. Now, what does she mean by application? Did she mean the petition? I don't know. It's ambiguous, but it's certainly relevant when they're saying that half of this sentence means what we say it means and don't look at the rest. The problem, as I said before, with the legislative history is that it's a very, very awkward tool to interpret a statute when the plain meaning of the words used are manifest an evident purpose that is consistent with the overall intent of the legislation. It's well settled that the purpose of our immigration laws, or one of the primary goals of our immigration laws, is family unification. Senator Feinstein said that this is also relevant to people who are waiting due to a scarcity of visas, a visa backlog, not just administrative delays. So the petitioner's interpretation is certainly consistent with the overall purpose of our immigration laws in respect to family unity, and it's consistent with the interpretation of the words used, the common meaning of the words used in the statute. Now, the respondent has said, oh, well, this alleviates someone from filing a petition. That's why we put D in there. Well, you could have achieved the same result if you had left D out of H3. If all you had put in H3 was for the purposes of subsection A2A, it would have achieved the same purpose without D. The only reason to put D in there is to be consistent with the rest of the subsection. And if we look at subsection 2, which the respondent has said refers back to subsection 1, it doesn't. Subsection 2 says petitions described, the petition described in this paragraph. It refers to itself. I mean, I think that's probably wasn't written very well. But it doesn't say this only applies to the preceding subsection, and it doesn't say the petition is described in the preceding paragraph. It says described in this paragraph. And it includes the entire universe of immigrant visa petitions. Now, if that was the intent
of the counsel's argument that there's nothing to be automatically converted to,
Automatic conversion is a procedural issue. Now, if the respondent wants to say your petition will automatically convert to that second preference, to that son of a lawful permanent resident petition category upon the filing of a petition, then that's a procedural issue. But it doesn't describe the scope of aliens eligible.
It doesn't eliminate the need to file for the mother to file a petition.
Right. And the respondent says it does, but that same regulation, HCFR 204.2A4, is still on the books. This was passed 11 years ago. Now, if that was the intent, to save people from spending now $420, the respondent hasn't decided to do so yet.
The regs still require them to file a petition?
That's correct, Your Honor. In fact, in my office right now, I have a denial from USCIS dated February of 2011 because they didn't file a subsequent petition for the adult son of an LPR. So I hardly think that's credible when the respondent has taken no action whatsoever to amend the regulations to reflect that, if that's his real interpretation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rush.
Thank you, Your Honor. We respectfully request that the petition be granted, Your Honor.